My mother was very familiar with her neighborhood, but one day she stopped at the stop sign and she wasn't even really sure where she was at.
When something feels different, it could be Alzheimer's. Now is the time to talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
Olympic drama as a doping scandal jeopardizes Russia's team skating medal, plus rising inflation and wages prompt warnings of a 70s-style wage price spiral. And Sunday's Super Bowl will be a banner day for the sports betting industry, but can they actually turn a profit?
This level of marketing spending can't last forever, and these companies will have to figure out how to turn a profit.
It's Friday, February 11th. I'm Luke Vargas with the Wall Street Journal. Here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. The Biden administration is requesting federal assistance from Canada to end 4 days of anti-vaccine mandate protests by Canadian truck drivers that have blocked traffic on a key border crossing between Ontario and Michigan. Meanwhile, the Department of Homeland Security is warning of copycat demonstrations in the United States, saying truckers could attempt to disrupt traffic around Sunday's Super Bowl in L.A., as well as in D.C., ahead of next month's State of the Union address. At the Winter Olympics in Beijing, Russia's gold medal in team figure skating is now in doubt after sports officials confirmed that Russian skating star Kamila Valieva tested positive for a banned substance last December. It means the U.S. could potentially move from silver to gold. The Journal's Georgi Kanchev has the latest from Beijing.
Authorities here are racing against time because Valieva is due to appear next week in the women's competition, where she's one of the favorites, if not a top favorite.
The Russian Olympic Committee said that Valieva repeatedly passed doping tests before and after the positive result, adding that she currently has the right to train and take part in the competition, pending an appeal by the International Olympic Committee. France is planning to build 6 new nuclear reactors by 2035. President Emmanuel Macron hopes this can enable the country to produce electricity with almost zero greenhouse gas emissions amid concerns about climate change. The government is also bolstering the country's nuclear industry and considering the construction of a further 8 reactors. But opponents have argued the technology isn't safe and is too costly. And we're exclusively reporting that Comcast is looking to shift high-profile programming from Hulu and to its own Peacock streaming program as early as this fall. It means new episodes of shows like The Voice and Saturday Night Live would no longer be immediately available on Hulu. The move would be the latest indication of the changing relationship between Hulu's co-owners, Walt Disney and NBC Universal, which went from streaming partners to direct competitors in recent years. Of course, the Super Bowl is about sports. But this Sunday's game is also shaping up to be a huge day for the American sports betting industry. And here with a preview is Journal reporter Catherine Sayer, who covers the gambling and sports betting industries for us. She also just happens to be in the Super Bowl host city of Los Angeles. Hey, Catherine.
Hi there.
Catherine, what kind of money are we expecting to see bet on Sunday's Super Bowl?
Yeah, it's going to be a big day for the industry. I mean, more than 31 million Americans are expected to bet on the Super Bowl this year, and that's up nearly a third from last year. And it's estimated they'll wager more than $7.6 billion. Much of that growth is from the fact that, you know, more states have legalized sports betting since last year's NFL championship. It's in about 30 states and the District of Columbia at this point. You know, sports betting has only been legal outside of Las Vegas since 2018, when the Supreme Court issued a ruling that allowed other states to take this up. So before that, there was still a lot of betting through offshore gray market websites. But now that it's legal in so many states, you've got some of the biggest corporate names in gambling, MGM, Caesars, DraftKings, FanDuel. They're offering it in this relatively new legal space that some say could reach a $40 billion market one day.
Wow. So given that Supreme Court decision you mentioned, I imagine gambling activity is really changing and shifting away from physical casinos.
Yeah. I mean, like most things in life, most of the betting activity is occurring online now. And that's what the gambling companies are making huge investments in, rather than, you know, the sports books you might see walking around a casino. Not every state has adopted mobile betting. but most have. Some do limit it to in-person bets. But take a state like New Jersey, for example. $10 billion was bet on sports last year. 90% of that was mobile and online. So the legacy casino operators are all trying to compete for this digital space.
And finally, Catherine, what is the outlook for this industry in the U.S. longer term?
Well, sportsbooks want to make money on the Super Bowl, of course, this year, right? But the game is really more about customer acquisition, and that has really defined this industry. So when you think about FanDuel, DraftKings, Caesars, BetMGM, they're not at the point of being profitable yet in sports betting because of the amount of money they're spending on marketing and getting their brands out. So it's really about expanding their reach. But everyone agrees this level of marketing spending can't last forever, and these companies will have to figure out how to turn a profit on this.
That was Journal reporter Catherine Sayer. Catherine, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Coming up, with consumer prices soaring and wages struggling to keep pace, policymakers are increasingly worried about a prolonged cost of living crisis. But how real is that risk? Stay tuned for the answer after the break.
My mother was very familiar with her neighborhood, but one day she stopped at the stop sign and she wasn't even really sure where she was at.
When something feels different, it could be Alzheimer's. Now is the time to talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
U.S. inflation has hit a new 40-year high, exacerbating the price pressures on average consumers, and it's leading some economists, opinion writers, and members of Congress to warn about the dreaded wage price spiral, which they say could wipe out years of income gains for families. But what causes a wage price spiral? What prevents one? And are we actually witnessing the prelude to one now? Journal senior writer John Hilsenrath is here to answer some of those questions. Hey, John.
Hi there, Luke. How are you doing?
First off, could you just explain what a wage price spiral is in the first place?
Sure. One way to think about it is it's kind of like a dance where both partners are leading. A wage price spiral is when prices go up, we see inflation, and then workers want to catch up because their cost of living is increasing, so they demand wage increases. Well, when they get wage increases, companies say, our costs are rising, we've got to raise prices even more. And then so you get this kind of upward spiral where each is pushing on the other to keep pushing wages and prices higher and higher. And basically, it's a force that keeps inflation rising.
And what does history tell us about these wage price spirals and the conditions that typically bring them about?
So what we're worried about today is a repeat of the 1970s when we did have a wage price spiral where wages rose and inflation rose and they fed on each other. But there are other times in history when that hasn't happened. After World War II, we had a couple of spikes in wages and inflation, but they receded very quickly. It didn't last the way it did in the 1970s. And then in other periods since the 1970s, we've had periods where wages rose, but prices didn't, and periods where prices rose and wages different. So I talked about this dance. Well, there are some moments when there are forces that interfere with the dance and keep it from feeding on itself.
Okay, so just backing up here, who is warning about a wage price spiral right now, and who thinks this current risk is being overplayed?
If you look at the bond market, that's where it looks like investors have been pretty complacent. So a bond market is very sensitive to inflation because you have a fixed interest payment on a bond, say a treasury bond. And if you get inflation, that fixed interest payment isn't going to go up. And then so you see a lot of volatility in bond markets. You see yields on bonds rising when there's a real worry about inflation. Well, yields on bonds have been rising, but they're still exceptionally low. Now that could change. In terms of who is, the group that I find interesting is some economists that I talk to who have been making an argument for decades that inflation is under control, that the forces that caused a spike in inflation in the 1970s have receded. And now I'm talking to economists who are saying, well, wait a second, the gears of this economy might be turning. It actually might be changing in a way that really does risk inflation. So that I find to be kind of interesting, that the economists who seem to be so relaxed about it are now saying, well, we got to take this one seriously.
All right, so some economists are worried here, and even central bankers have warned that wages aren't keeping pace with inflation. What does that mean for consumers?
Well, so, I mean, that's a problem for households, and it's actually a reason why they would demand another round of wage increases, because if your paycheck goes up 5%, but your cost of living goes up 7%, that means you're falling behind, because you might be earning more, but the dollar you bring home isn't going as far as it used to because the price of everything else is rising. And it's exactly that kind of situation. They call it real wages, when real wages are falling, where households want more to keep up with the rising cost of living.
So if we do begin to see indications of a wage price spiral taking place, what options are available to policymakers to jump in and try to avert that?
So one way to think about this is to go back to economics 101. You have supply and you have demand, and both forces are at play right now. So on the supply side, COVID shut down so much industry, right? So supply has been constrained. When supply is constrained, prices go up. And then we've had demand. When demand increases, prices go up. And this gets to policymakers. Now, what would stop this wage price spiral? Well, what we hope for is that as the economy reopens after COVID, that these supply disruptions that I talked about ease up. There's more supply. If there's more supply, prices should recede, and then the problem solves itself. If the problem doesn't solve itself, then it's on the hands of policymakers to affect the demand side. And that's kind of like taking a hammer to the problem. Basically, what happens is the Federal Reserve raises interest rates. It makes it more costly to borrow money. And the wage price spiral is solved by constraining demand, which is painful. If you constrain demand too much, you could get a recession.
That was Journal senior writer John Hilsenrath. John, thanks for breaking this down for us.
Sure thing. My pleasure.
And finally, SpaceX CEO Elon Musk says the cost of blasting into space could soon get a lot cheaper. He made that announcement in Texas, where the company soon hopes to launch its Starship rocket once it receives FAA approval. Our reporter Micah Maidenberg says the rocket would be the biggest ever to be sent into orbit.
Starship is the company's massive rocket that is meant for basically its most ambitious missions, including to the moon, potentially to Mars. One of the big challenges with Starship is that it's meant to be sort of fully and rapidly reusable. Basically, Mr. Musk said he was highly confident that within 2 or 3 years, Starship would be launching at less than $10 million a launch. Now, presumably, if that's the cost for SpaceX, that would mean lower costs for customers that would get on board.
And that's What's News for Friday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Have a great weekend, and thanks for listening.